It's not a common practice for your average person in prison to have done, but towards the end of any class, there's almost without fail this real shift in energy amongst the whole group of men. And they're just, the mood lightens, voices soften, and there's a different level of introspection and reflection that takes place within that.
Hello and welcome to TBR. Today we're joined by Rory Bradshaw. Rory has explored and developed incredible skill in multiple movement modalities over his career, from calisthenics and strength to bringing in flexibility through yoga practice and eventually teaching it. Drawing on his background in youth, school and community work, Rory has taken his yoga practice into UK prisons, teaching in multiple wings across the UK. All of this movement experience informs and underlines how he connects with running, a newer addition to his toolkit, but one that he is keen to explore and develop further. In this conversation, we journey through Rory's movement background, discovering his love of yoga, teaching it in prison, how that all filters through to running, and stay at the end as he gives out some top tips on what runners can do to help feel that little bit more flexible. I'm really grateful to Rory for joining us. Let's get into the interview. Rory, thank you so much for coming on The Big Run. Really excited to have you on. Really excited to learn more about your story, your connection to movement and your lens on this sport of running as well. To kick things off then, let's start with that topic of movement, because your kind of the way I discovered you was through the stories you've been sharing about yoga and strength training online, and particularly where you've been teaching it as well. But I'd love to find out, before we get onto that, where you first connected to movement and where that story began for you.
Sure, yeah. So I think as a teenager, I was lucky enough to try all kinds of sports. I think my dad was a big motivator in that, but also because he'd gained so much from practicing sports, not to any high level when he was younger, but just kind of sports ability to connect you to other people, to help you make friends, to give you a sense of identity, and to kind of build different sort of character traits, whether that's kind of grit and toughness or courage, determination, all these things that anyone who practices any kind of sport will get just from the process of doing it. I had the chance to try various sports, football, rugby, cricket, and so on. And some of them I enjoyed, some of them I definitely didn't enjoy. The main reason being I'm not particularly competitive in a sort of team environment. And so I found it hard sometimes to buy into this like idea that, oh, we're going to play this team and we've got to do whatever it takes to beat them and so on and so on. And whatever it is, I just don't have that in me, you know. And it's probably a good thing as a Tottenham fan to you know, not have that in me, because I'm used to losing in those team situations. but what I did find was that by kind of exploring movement in my own way, I actually found a kind of different relationship to physical activity, which was not based in competition, but was based in the kind of all the other benefits it handed me. And I think one of the big turning points was when I was about, I want to say 13, 14, I got robbed in the street by this guy and his friend, and they took whatever small change I had from me. And the experience kind of sort of traumatized me, really, to be honest. It was really horrible, and I felt so vulnerable in that situation. And so I kind of didn't go out of my house I went to school, but beyond that I didn't really go out from my house and didn't really play out for a while. And it took me a while to sort of build up my confidence to sort of go back into public and just go to the shop by myself again and whatever. And what helped me though get back on the track was kind of the training I started doing in my room without really thinking about it too hard. I just decided, like, I want to get stronger, basically. I don't want to feel that sort of weakness and so on. And so I just started doing sit-ups and press-ups and so on. And I came across these videos on YouTube of guys in New York training calisthenics in parks. And I was just like, these guys just represented everything I think that I felt I wasn't in that moment where I got robbed. They were strong and athletic and confident. And I just thought it was so cool. And they were doing some stuff I'd never seen before. And this was like early YouTube days. So, you know, it wasn't common to see some crazy physical feats happening all the time. So I started doing this and training my room and so on. And then I started going to the gym at kind of age about 15, 16. And I was really lucky to then find some really positive male role models in the gym space, whether they were like trainers who worked there and they just kind of took me under their wing and showed me how to lift with good technique and so on. Or they were kind of other people who were at the gym, like boys who were slightly older than me in their sort of late teens, who again just kind of saw me going and probably doing, you know, some terrible form squats or deadlifts or whatever it was. And they were just like, all right, come here, Rory. This is how you do it. And I quickly kind of got really into sort of training in a variety of ways, not because I wanted to feel strong and be this kind of, not just to build robustness for that time when I'd got robbed in the street, but actually I found very quickly that it was giving me a kind of new confidence and sense of self and a sense of identity, because I was finding that I was becoming part of this community of people who were kind of moving and lifting and doing calisthenics and so on. And I then kind of discovered the sort of calisthenics subculture that was happening at the time in England, and there were these other guys around who were kind of doing all these things, and I just really admired them for the sort of the discipline they were showing, the determination, but also the creativity, because calisthenics is quite a creative practice. There's you know, there's so many ways you can do a pull-up or a handstand or whatever, and I really liked that kind of duality of like, it's rigid and it's disciplined and it's strength building, but you can really bring some creativity to it and you can practice it in a way that suits you. And I also found it quite accommodating, because a bit like with running, you have different types of bodies prefer or are better or worse at doing different types of distances and speeds and so on. And similarly with body weight training, calisthenics, gym training, different body types, you know, have different kind of respond differently to the training and perform particularly well or not so well. And I think I just enjoyed really learning about my body and what my strengths were, what weaknesses were, how I could just try and address those and get a bit more balanced throughout. I've forgotten your original question, Dave.
No, well, my original question was your journey into movement. And I think you've started to sort of trace that line so beautifully there. And it's just interesting. And I think a lot of people can resonate that with that feeling you describe of starting to see glimmers of an identity, being part of a community, of doing something that you enjoy and love. And you mentioned that word duality there. And when I think of calisthenics and the strength side of things, I do think of that strength, that sort of physical kind of wonder of the things that people are able to do with their bodies, the shapes that they can form, the feats that they can kind of achieve. But on the flip side of that, with you, when did the flexible side start to come into focus with yoga, and did the two marry, or was it a bit of a sort of shock to your body at first when you've been sort of focusing on, this is me coming at it from not knowing, but focusing on those sort of strength feats to then being like, okay, I want to sort of contort my body in a completely different way that perhaps isn't applicable with what I've been doing previously?
I suppose the continuity that happened from doing calisthenics into flexibility or mobility training was the fact that I think I was in gym spaces or at parks or whatever doing my calisthenics. And unlike, say, someone who goes to the gym to achieve a certain aesthetic and body build and so on, my training was all rooted in kind of like trying to be as strong as possible, but also trying to perform as best as I could in any movement I chose to do. So it was like, if I'm going to do a pull-up, rather than wanting to get as many pull-ups as possible, I want to be able to perform one pull-up as best I can through the biggest range as possible. So I always kind of had this attitude to whatever movement I want to do, I want to try and do it to my body's best potential. And that doesn't just involve banging out loads of reps and doing strength, but it involves actually moving through the range as best I can, as strong as I can. So I already had this kind of approach to physical training by the time I discovered yoga. And I think by the time I discovered yoga, that helped me slot into yoga more easily and take to it more easily. I was introduced to yoga in around 2017. And I'd never done it before. I hadn't really thought about it much before. I think like a lot of men in the West, at least, yoga is not something that's really marketed to us. And it's not something that's really introduced to us. It's something maybe if you're straight, your female partner might take you to, or it's something that seems quite intimidating because you have this idea that you need to be flexible in the first place to do it. I think I also probably had a sense, if I'm honest, that it was probably quite easy and that it didn't really hold much benefit, because I felt like, oh, it's just passive stretching, you know, and I already do my mobility training and strength work, so I don't think there'd be a physical benefit. And I wasn't aware of any of the kind of wider benefits of it. And I think my ignorance made me just was a barrier to me not trying it sooner. I just felt like it was a flexibility discipline, basically. And of course it's not, it's so much more. And so I'm very grateful to have been introduced to it when I was. I was working at a community center in South London at the time. I was running the youth provision for hundreds of young people that access this center each year. And it was immensely enjoyable, but also quite stressful and very, very busy. And that combined with things I was dealing with in my personal life, primarily like grieving for my dad, who died about within a year of me starting working there, I had a few things going on, which meant that I was functioning pretty well on the surface, but internally I was having a kind of a daily struggle to feel at peace within myself. And so I got introduced to this free community yoga class that was happening every week at the community center, and the teacher was trying to encourage me to come every week. She's like, oh, you got to try it, you'll love it. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I was so busy, that was always my excuse. I've got work to do, and if I had spare time, I wanted to go and do pull-ups or go and do some mobility training or something, you know, or do some boxing because I love martial arts too. And so eventually, though, she convinced me to try it. And by the end of the first class, I was laying there in Shavasana, which is the, I don't know how familiar you are with yoga, but is usually how a class finishes. It's usually the final resting pose. And I was crying. I was trying not to cry. And what the class had done was given me an opportunity to connect to that inner world that was quite turbulent at the time, and to provide me with a space to be still, because I wasn't very still in my life. I was constantly on the go. And it kind of gave me an emotional release. And so I immediately then, my eyes to what the possibilities of yoga were beyond just a movement discipline were kind of broadened. And I had a really enlightening conversation with the teacher afterwards about what yoga is and is what it can do for you and so on. And then from that point, I then started to go every week and never look back, really.
Do you think at first, because it's similar when you talk about that sort of slight, not resistance, but that sort of feeling uncomfortable with stillness to begin with within the yoga practice is something I can definitely resonate with myself. Like whenever I've sort of explored like yoga or meditation, particularly, I find it incredibly difficult to sort of quieten the mind. Do you feel that it was the right place, right time, you were ready for that particular class to have that sense of unlocking, given the context you'd found yourself in with what you were dealing with personally that allowed it to happen? Or do you think if you perhaps hadn't been in that situation, there might have been a bit more kind of resistance to you having that kind of breakthrough moment?
I think I could have found benefits from the yoga at any time in my life. I think what's so important with yoga is that, one, the teacher. I think I had the right teacher at the right time. I think there's such a wealth of teachers offering yoga now, and they all bring something different. And that's something different from what aspects of the tradition they're offering to you, but also what aspects of themselves and their own experiences and so on. And I think it was a combination of that teacher at that time in my life making me feel safe enough to have that experience. And I think sometimes I speak to people now and they say to me like, I want to try yoga, or based on your videos, Rory, or I know yoga's good for me and I want to try it. Or they've been to a class or two and they've said, it's not for me. And I do believe that yoga's not for everyone. I don't think it's this kind of all-encompassing perfect system to heal and help us all, not at all. But I do think that just because you've been to a yoga class once, you've not really tried yoga in its fullest, you know. And it takes time. I think just like with running, I think, for example, you only start to enjoy running often once you get to a certain level of fitness and your joints aren't killing you and aching and you've managed to quieten down that negative voice of self-talk in your head, which is telling you, oh, you're not a runner, you're not built for this, you just stop, all those things. You have to keep sort of persevering and exploring and find that right teacher or find that right running route or run club or whatever before you can kind of connect with it and be like, okay, this is a space that I enjoy it. Because even now, there's a whole host of yoga classes that I know that I don't go to because I know I wouldn't connect to them. And then there's others that I do. So I think it's a question of self-exploration to find the one that suits you.
I love that. I love that. And yeah, finding that space where you feel comfortable to allow yourself to truly absorb and take it in. And you touched on running there. And don't worry, listeners, we are going to get onto that soon. But I'm just curious to kind of lay this context and foundation of you and your kind of lens of movement and then how that filters through running. But I'd be remiss, because I'd love to touch on it if you're okay sort of discussing it, how you went from that first class to having that sort of moment of unlocking to then becoming a teacher and then bringing that work into a context that perhaps you may not have even imagined bringing it into. Do you want to sort of unpack that a little bit for us?
Yeah, so I had the real privilege to train to be a yoga teacher fairly soon after getting into yoga. As I mentioned, I kind of took to the physical sides of the practice quite quickly because I had this movement, mobility, strength training background, which allowed me to access all the basic asanas quite soon on. But what's special about the place where I was practicing yoga is that it's a very community oriented yoga. What's special about the place where I was introduced to yoga is that it's offered by a charity called Live Karma Yoga, and their intention is to make yoga accessible to as many groups of people as possible. And so they were already offering yoga in HMP Wandsworth and have been doing so for a while. And they kind of started to, I became friends with the two amazing women that run it, and they started to also kind of mentor me through my own yoga journey. So my sort of level of progression with my understanding of yoga was quite fast. And they then offered me the opportunity to train to be a yoga teacher with a yoga company based in London called Hot Pod Yoga, which offers scholarships to people like myself. And without that opportunity, I would never have become, I wouldn't be a yoga teacher because I wouldn't have been able to afford it at the time. I wasn't even thinking to be a teacher at the time at all. I was just finding a lot of personal benefit from this. And so even when they first suggested, like, oh, Rory, we have this opportunity for you, we think you might be interested, so I was like, no, I don't think so. And then they explained that, you know, they offer the yoga in the prison and so on. And that was when my mind started to turn a bit, because for context, the work I was doing in the community was centered around supporting vulnerable and disadvantaged young people and adults to kind of turn their lives around and find a more positive path. And a lot of those people were involved or at risk of being involved in crime. So I was already doing a lot of one-to-one work with families and young people who were in and out of the criminal justice system already. So I was taking young people to court, and I was going to visit them at Feltham, and I was sort of familiar with prison. And also several years previously, I'd been volunteering at a prison for a charity to mentor someone in the lead up to their release. And so the idea of going into a prison wasn't totally unfamiliar at all. You know, I'd done that before. But then to marry that with teaching yoga was something I hadn't considered at all. But I did the yoga training. That was really exceptional. Very, very challenging personally and emotionally and sort of intellectually, but so much. I loved it. It's probably one of the best sort of periods of study I've ever done. You know, and I've quite an academic earlier life, so it was really exceptional. And so as soon as I qualified, I then started, instead of teaching in studios, I was then went to teach in prison. And that process has been just wonderful. Like, it's a real, it's kind of partly what you'd expect maybe for someone who thinks, like, what's yoga like in prison? Like, it is, you are offering a practice which is not commonplace in that space. It's certainly a space of, what can I say? You know, prison's a very unhealthy environment. It's also at times quite a violent environment. It contains a lot of people with mental health issues, physical health issues, and ultimately you're offering yoga to a traumatized population. And so it's not. It's something you have to be very mindful of and how you approach it. But I think what's been so, I suppose, and yet there's such an obvious benefit to offering yoga within that space. And I saw that within the first class that I observed, and then the first class that I taught, even within that 60 minutes, from the guys being often quite skeptical because they've often not tried yoga before, and often slightly very anxious to be doing something that they have no idea about, that really also puts them in positions physically that they've probably not been in before and is potentially quite exposing, in the sense of, you know, they might never have, like, lifted their legs over their head into a plow pose before or something. You know, just it's not a common practice for your average person in prison to have done. But towards the end of any class, there's almost without fail this real shift in energy amongst the whole group of men. And they're just, the mood lightens, voices soften, and there's a different level of introspection and reflection that takes place within that. And it's just so clear to me, the benefit. And I love it.
It's lovely to hear you talk about it. And it's interesting, that thing, because I think when people, you know, listen to what yoga in prisons, actually there's a lot of different things that happen within prison for reform for the prisoners. Like, theatre in prison has been happening for years, years and years and years, and remarkable work happens. There's remarkable theatre companies that are focused entirely on Clean Break, a perfect example of that sort of thing. So yoga, you know, to me doesn't sound like a big leap, but yet the actual practicalities of what you're describing, and, you know, feeling vulnerable or putting yourself in positions or getting something wrong in a class, you know, with your kind of peers and stuff, and the potential ramifications of feeling vulnerable in that space. But I'm keen, and I'm not asking you to share sort of individual stuff for the people you work with, but have there been any particular reflections at the end of a class that have sort of stayed with you, or things that have really kind of left a sort of profound effect on you as the teacher?
Almost every time I teach, yeah. I think you have those, firstly, there's the kind of physical, the reflections on physical changes that have happened. So often, and I don't work in a women's prison, so I'm going to speak for the men. Often the men describe, you know, back pain and shoulder pain and so on as a result of like very low quality mattresses, and a result of the fact that often they're in their cells for the like 90% of the day, you know, and they just don't move. They don't have the opportunity to move. And when they do, it might be a quick gym session that's very intense, very high energy and very strength-based. And then there's no kind of yin to that yang, you know, there's no softening to it. There's no flexibility element to it. So a lot of the guys at the end of class will describe like, oh, my back feels so much better, or my shoulders feel better, or I feel like I'm standing taller, you know, physical benefit for sure. But kind of similar to the benefit that I initially found from yoga of emotional and mental benefits, the guys in prison particularly report kind of feeling calmer, reports saying how the yoga's helped them with their anxiety, and particularly helping them with kind of overthinking. You know, they have so much time in there to just think, and that often leads them down negative thought pathways. And so the opportunity, I think, to focus on breathing, to have the opportunity to be guided through meditations, to be guided through body scans and relaxations, gives them a chance to come back to their body and to disconnect from overthinking and to come back to the present moment. And so one of the best things they can say to me sometimes is like, oh, I forgot I was in prison for a while then, or I forgot where I was, you know. And that's despite the fact that throughout the class, there's no music. All you can hear is banging and crashing and doors closing and locks turning and dogs barking. Like it's hectic, you know. And yet they can find this space of kind of stillness and peace and so on, which can just slow down those incessant thoughts that a lot of them have and give them either space to develop a more positive relationship with their body, or to find space to think about the things that they, or connect to the things that they really care about. So sometimes at the end of class, guys will talk about how they were meditating and reflecting on a relationship they have with a family member, or something associated with, often it comes back to love, to be honest. Yeah, and maybe they don't always verbalize that, but what they're describing is they have an opportunity to connect to their love for either themselves or for those important people in their life. And I think in the context of like, why are they in prison? What's the purpose and so on? I really see yoga offering an opportunity to develop people who are incarcerated to be a different, better version of themselves to whoever that person was that committed that crime. And the knock-on effect is so positive for their own experience, as well as for the staff in the prison who then have to work with them as they leave the class. And then I also believe then for society as a whole, when they do eventually get released and they've got these tools, if they've been coming to class regularly, of breathing, meditation, yoga, asana practice, in order to kind of live a more peaceful life, a more reflective life, and less one that's kind of based on instinct, because that often it's those instincts which have often led them to be where they are.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. And there's so much firing in my mind just hearing you go into that response then. And I'm sure you have detractors about that thing, but I feel like at its core, and I'm not going to get into a big discussion about prison reform, that's a whole other completely different podcast, but there's that thing of prison being a place to reflect and, you know, think on your sins, like a time for real thought. And it just feels like the perfect marriage of that practice to really allow the opportunity to make that happen, because with all the best will in the world, if you say to someone, just sit and think for a moment, it's very hard, and it feels like yoga is the perfect entry point to allow that to happen. And just hearing some of the things that you've received from the people who've been in your classes, it sounds extraordinary. And another thing that also happens in prisons, I'm not sure if they do in the UK, oh, it does happen in the UK, is parkrun. Running. There we go, yeah. Listeners. We made it. We got there in the end. But I really wanted to lay your foundation, because I think that really provides important context. So when did that become part of your life? And with that background of strength and then yoga, I mean, what was your first take to it? Was it like that first class? Was it sort of love at first sight, or was it a journey for you when running became part of your kind of your toolkit as someone who moves?
Great question. I think I first, obviously I'd been running with on football pitches or wherever in my earlier years, but you never really think I'm a runner or I'm running now. I'm playing football, I'm kicking ball, or I'm playing rugby, whatever. I think the first time I was ever like, I'm going to go on a run was when I started boxing, and I started doing Muay Thai, and then when I went to university, boxing. And I kind of mentioned earlier to you that I hadn't really taken much to team sport, but I really took to martial arts and that kind of individual sport, because it kind of forces you to step up and I suppose be competitive in a kind of controlled way. And a part of boxing training, as we all know, is to go on runs. And, you know, that's part of boxing culture, is to go on these long runs by yourself and put your music in and go on. And I was at uni in Bristol at the time. And so I'd started going, I hadn't done boxing before I went to uni. So I started going and loved it. And part of that was then I started taking myself on these runs around the city. And I just, it was immediately like, well, immediately, first off, it was hard. So I wasn't immediately there. And anyone knows Bristol was very hilly. So like it was hard. But as I got fitter and more kind of at ease with it, I was like, damn, this is such a good way to like explore the city. And I think coming as an outsider to a new city, like you just don't know. I didn't know what area was what. And I deliberately wanted to stay in accommodation that was kind of separate from the main student residences on the peripheries of the city and stay in a kind of smaller one in the center, because I wanted to like get to know the place I was going to. And running was my way of doing that. I was just like, I'd just set out because I had a bit more time as a student. I would just go on these runs and just explore. And I'd find myself like up by a suspension bridge or down by the river or over in another side of the city called Eastern or wherever. And it just allowed me to just, I was studying geography at the time, so I quite like maps and, you know, having a clear sense of space. So it just allowed me to just really develop my own personal sense of geography whilst getting fitter and helping my boxing and so on. And I think at the time I was like quite clueless. I was just like, I think I did record things on Strava, but like I never ran the same route more than once. I never didn't really know what I was aiming for with a split time or anything. I think the best bit about it was looking at the map afterwards and being like, wow, I just saw all these parts of the city. So that was it. Yeah. And then from then over the next few years, I then started doing like a few challenges. So I did the first ever Tough Mudder race when it first came to England. And I know they're really popular now, but at the time it was like a really like cool challenge to do. Still a cool challenge to do, but it was quite unusual. And I didn't really also appreciate how much running was involved until I signed up for it. And then I realized it's kind of like a half marathon situation. And I was like, I never run that far before. And I'm going to get electrocuted. I'm like,
and I've paid to do it.
yeah, what the hell? But my housemate at the time, he's like a seriously good runner. He went to like the university run club and he was like, he's very good at it. And so he and I would do a bit of training together and I would also go out by myself. And I think through doing that Tough Mudder, which I really enjoyed, and then I did a fundraiser for a charity at the time, a half marathon around London. And again, I was like, at no point did I feel like I'm really good at this. I'm quite heavy and I'm quite sort of built, and it was never my focus because I was doing boxing and going to the gym and doing all my other training. But it was really just an opportunity for me to just like have space to explore and have space for myself to think and for my mind. And anyone who's runs regularly will know, like you, Danny, like that feeling after the run, like it's just, there's nothing like it, you know? Mm. And it's a similar, it's kind of a clarity and a peacefulness and a kind of gentle kind of uplifting of how you feel, which you just can't find anywhere else. And it's, yeah, and I think that for that reason, I've just run ever since.
Where are you at with it now? Just thinking of that person you describe of someone who is perhaps not competitive within a team context, but maybe competitive with yourself. Would that be a fair sort of summation of where you're at? Have you sort of thought about entering into more races, like more Tough Mudders, like racing against other people? Like, is that something you're sort of entertaining within running, or for you, is it something that's more about what you just articulated then, like a personal thing, like you're not chasing, you're looking for a feeling, you're looking for a clarity? Or could you be tempted into towing the line at a track race, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I have running goals, and I kind of feel like I'm going to come to them a bit later in life. Mm. Simple goals I have would be like, I want to run an ultra marathon. I've always been inspired by ultra marathon runners. I've listened to so many podcasts with them on. I've watched like documentaries. Like, I love it.
What is it about that challenge that really resonates with you?
I think it goes back to why I first started running, which is I was running because I wanted to like explore a city and to like move around and so on. And I think it's nothing more empowering than like going on a run and taking yourself from like A to B and being like, I did that myself with no help, no equipment, no like fancy anything. I just like put one foot in front of the other and I've been able to like explore the world basically in this very small way. And then an ultra marathon, you can just do that like times 50, you know, and you can just go across and explore the world in this crazy way. And it's just so simple. And it's such a nice balance of like physical challenge, mental challenge, emotional challenge. And I just, it's always kind of been something that I think I'd take to and want to, not take to, but want to have a go at one day. And the reason I haven't done it so far, or kind of got more competitive with running more generally, is that running doesn't always align with my other physical goals. I think, you know, I have several physical goals I'm trying to achieve at the moment that are, for example, like a deeper middle splits or like improving my wheel pose and so on. And running, as you'll probably know, makes you tight. And running is not particularly conducive to getting more flexible. It's the opposite. And so every time I go on a run, it's kind of like an acknowledgement that this, unless I do some real stretching afterwards, this is going to set me back in my other physical training goals. And therefore, it's something I do for like my cardiovascular health, absolutely, but more so is something I just do for sort of mental and emotional well-being, and not something that I'm trying to push at the moment.
You're right, it certainly makes you tight. And I imagine if anyone's been listening to this who's been sat down, instantly have just readjusted their hips, or they've cracked something in sort of in solidarity with that sentiment. But I'd be remiss if I didn't take advantage, and I'm not asking you to I'm not asking for a free yoga class here, Rory, but I'd be keen to get your perspective for the runners who may be listening. Are there things that you have found that are there things that people can be mindful of or people can consider to help maybe to lessen that stiffness or improve it? And obviously there's no one size fits all, and this is just from your kind of personal experience, but things people can think of to maybe give themselves a little bit more flexibility and less of that sort of intake of breath or wince when one gets up from the sofa after sitting for a long period of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think often stretching is an afterthought of many runners, and it's something that is, I think many people approach their running with real structure and intention, and do not apply that same approach for their stretching afterwards. It's often, I see a lot of people who run, they'll just, you know, do a quick little standing quad stretch and maybe just like a little hip opener or something after their run or whatever. And it's almost like they're doing the same stretch as they learned at PE in school, like, you know, 20 years before or whatever. And it probably helps a little bit, but I think what I've found is like 10 to 15 minutes of like structured, just passive stretching after a run can just really help you to maintain your flexibility, helps you feel better and reduces a bit of that soreness. You're going to be like, if you push in a run, you're going to be sore regardless. So that can't be avoided. But certainly I've found, having sort of tested it out myself, that 10 to 15 minutes structured stretching, focusing on those areas which you get particularly tight in. And so for myself, and I expect for most runners, that would be like calves, hamstrings, glutes, hip flexors. Like, keep it simple. And so for me, I have really stubborn calf muscles, and they are for, I think, a lot of people. So a simple like calf stretch where you angle your foot on a step or a yoga block or something, stretch those out for, you know, 90 seconds each side, to maybe 2 minutes. Combine that with, people do a quad stretch. If you can do that up against the wall, where you can go a bit deeper, even better. And you can work into your hip flexors then too. Hamstring stretch. So a simple one is to just put your foot on an elevated surface and sort of fold your torso forwards over that outstretched leg. And then a kind of external hip rotation, glute stretch, like a variation of a pigeon pose. And just those four, like, hold them for, as I said, 90 to 120 seconds each one. That will take you 10 minutes. I think it's also a really nice opportunity to control your breathing, slow down your breathing. You could even try and incorporate like elongated exhales. So that's going to help calm your nervous system down after your run, which is going to start that recovery process even faster. And just use that time to just kind of transition between your run before you then continue with the rest of your day or evening or whatever comes next. And don't have it as an afterthought, like, factor it in within the time you've allotted to do your run. And I think it's just going to help you with recovery, but also just your experience of your run as a whole will just be markedly improved.
Wow. Take the time. And I'm glad that you took the time to give such a wonderful response. I feel like I did sort of squeeze some nuggets out of you there. That's such a lovely thing to share. And that feels like a lovely note to sort of close out our conversation. But I just wanted to say, you were sort of touching on it earlier, this sense of exploration, and it feels like you are really exploring what is possible within movement for you. And I imagine once you maybe have achieved those physical goals, that pose you mentioned or the splits, the thought of that brings me out in a sort of a cold sweat, but hey, you never know. But I imagine that you will go to continue to explore and take on all kinds of challenges. Maybe there will be ultras, maybe it'll be something altogether different, who knows. But you are an absolute explorer in the world of movement, and I'm very grateful for you for coming on and being such a brilliant, brilliant guest on The Big Run.
Thanks so much for having me, Danny. It's been very enjoyable.
Big thank you to Rory for coming on the show. I'll put all the relevant links if you want to find out more about the work that he does, and so grateful to him for that yoga tip at the end as well. Who out there stretches at the end of their runs, and who needs to do a little bit more? I know this is audio only, but I'm holding my hands up right now. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you are enjoying the podcast. Please do leave us a review from wherever you get the episodes. It really helps with the show's visibility. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next time on The Big Run.